Hi, everybody. My name is Danielle. I'm a compulsive overeater. I just made 5 years, and I'm part of the Central Jersey Intergroup. I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. And man, life is really, really good. Today, it was particularly pleasant. That was just not something that I would have said 5 years ago. You know, majority of my life before I came in here, I felt like, I was a compulsive overeater my whole life. There was no time that I remember before the food. My earliest memories of food, I can tell I'm about 3 or 4 from the house where I lived. I would eat so much food, I would have to lay on the cold floor because my stomach and my back hurt. When my parents brought me to a restaurant, I would, oh my God, there was always like a kerfuffle. I was always fighting them. I had to have the adult meal. I never wanted the indignity of a kid's meal. And I would eat the whole thing too. And then I would throw up in the car accidentally, not on purpose, but repeatedly. I just, you know, I had a friend in OA and he said, talked about that, he never got hungry and he never got full. And I feel like that just describes perfectly my relationship with food. I grew up in a house that there were some isms present in the house, and it was kind of confusing. And I learned that food was very soothing for me. Food could provide things to me that I didn't feel like I was getting otherwise. Food always gave me, you know, there was nothing but attention from food. It's you and the food, and you're having an intimate moment together. Food was love. Things might have been chaotic in my house, but you know, at 6 o'clock every night, we all sat down like something out of Donna Reed, and we ate, you know, these huge, huge meals. I confused food with my culture. I'm Italian. And for me, I just didn't understand that there was more to Italian culture than food, which is pretty disrespectful of the art and architecture, right? What else? Food made up for the fact that, you know, I never felt part of any group. And I felt like if you said something nice to me, I thought that you said it to me because you had to. Or I thought you were making fun of me. I was always ready for a fight. I remember there was a girl, and she was 9 and I was 10. And she said to me, "I like your backpack." And I just, oh boy, I said the worst word you're not supposed to ever say, which doesn't fly in the Catholic school. But it just never occurred to me that someone could say something genuinely nice. I was always ready for a fight. I bullied other kids. You know, I was unhappy. And I had these feelings, a lot of anxiety, heavy, heavy, big feelings for a little kid. I can remember being up late at night and begging God, "Please, God, don't let anything, don't let anybody die. Don't let anybody get sick." You know, every single worrying. And I was suicidal from the time I was 9 years old. And today, when I look at kids that young, it's like, oh my gosh, like that's so young. And I was big feelings stuffed into a little person. And I think that's probably still true for me today, right? My feelings are a little bigger than me. What I found here is that I need help. I need help with those feelings. And I've gotten all that help here. But yeah, the food was, you know, really something. Food was the centerpiece of a date. It was the centerpiece of a vacation. If someone slighted me at school, I remember coming home and making concoctions, you know, because you'd have the food. If I could put one food on another food, on another food, on another food, like, I don't know, somehow I was always trying to extend that high. And the meals got bigger and bigger. And I remember one day coming home and a girl had said something mean. I said, "Well, she doesn't have this food." And it was just like, whatever I could do to soothe myself. I just think about food very differently than other people. Like I have memories from childhood. Like I can remember being 10 years old. We went to Mystic Seaport, Connecticut. I have no idea what we did there. I don't know what attraction. I know there was a big ship. I didn't know if you go on it or you just look at it. I don't remember, but I remember that I had roast duck with a raspberry sauce. And I guarantee nobody remembers that meal from 1992, but me, but that's me and food. And I say this because I want you to know that food was really, really important to me. It was the most important thing. And I like to mention that because when I came in, I heard about this person gave up this food and this person gave up that food. And I'm like, oh, well, they don't like it as much as me, right? Like, I thought this was just like an extra nice thing people did, like, you know, yoga or something to feel good. But I didn't think it could be for somebody like me. Because when I had my problems in the world, you know, when I read articles or I went to therapists, those were made for people who were not addicts, you know? So all the advice I got, you know, just do deep breathing when you're angry. Well, that doesn't work because now the anger is like, I'm on fire with this feeling and it never goes away. Or just stop eating. Those things don't work for a person like me. I don't know. I react differently. So I came to be the kind of person that I didn't think too much about suggestions that were made. They just always seemed like things that were for other people. You know, you might as well have said to me, well, just win the Olympics and then you'll have all the money you need, right? Like, just, it never made sense. So my journey with food was, you know, I ate and I ate and I ate. And soon I was numbing so much that by the time I got here, I didn't realize I was numbing because it was like breathing. It was just into the presence of my life. It was just woven that tightly in. So it's definitely hard to recognize why I needed a spiritual program of action. But I kept getting bigger and bigger and I'd lose a little bit of weight along the way. You know, I really, more than anything in the whole big book that describes the alcoholic, I identify when they talk about that the alcoholic, or in my case, the compulsive overeater, because that's how I read the big book. He builds up his life. He's got a promising outlook. And then he pulls it all down after a series of senseless sprees. And that was me. And this is the history of my life. I'd get in a relationship. This was the one. This was going to be the guy. I'd go to school. I'd get a couple credits. I'm on my way. I'm going to get that degree. I'd get a job. This is the best job ever. And then inevitably, you know, me and the guy were locking horns. I shouldn't even say locking horns, right? It was a lot of it was coming for me. I would say just button him like a billy goat, right? Just being as difficult as could be. No gratitude for the relationship. The schools were always about ready to put me on academic probation, if not bounce me. The job was, you know, tired of me coming in late, me doing this, me fighting with everybody, talking about everybody. I'd lose the job. And then I try to rebuild these things. It would happen. But what I noticed in the course of living was that the expiration date on the happinesses got shorter and shorter. I blamed my weight for all the failures. If I couldn't get a job, that was why. If I fought with my parents, well, they didn't love me. They didn't want a fat kid. Any rejection in dating was, oh no, it's because of that. It's the world is unfair. They're judging me by the way I look. And when I did that, you know, I know that there's prejudice in the world, but focusing only on that enabled me to not look at all at my side of the street. That was something I was great at before I got here. I didn't have a side of the street. You know, I'm standing, the world is burning down. There's a match in my hand, but somehow I don't have a part in this. It's you. Just like, I don't know, I'm a compulsive blamer as well, right? So, you know, also I'd have these patterns with food. I could go on these little diets here. I would try fad diets. You know, I'd do some kooky things. I bought a sticker that was supposed to make you lose weight, yada, yada, yada. I tried all this stuff. And then eventually I'd come around and say, oh, the fad diets are no good. I'm going to do this one diet. It's a very healthy diet. And I would tell you, I would be 50, 60 pounds more than you. And I would tell you how you were going to lose weight because I started this diet 2 weeks ago, but I knew what you should be doing. You shouldn't be doing. I always had my eyes on someone else's plea. And the most I could ever get, I was never that person that lost all the weight and gained it back. I would lose some of the weight and gain it back and more. I never identify with the ones who lost all the weight. And you know, the most I ever got out of these diets was 3 months. And I'll tell you, if I had a medical disease, if I had cancer and I had a treatment and it only lasted 3 months, I wouldn't think of that as a successful treatment. And yet my denial is such that I'll do this train of these diets. But meanwhile, these diets don't work for me, even though like if you do the whole calories in, calories out math, they should kind of probably work. When I can have certain substances, I love calling those my alcoholic food because I don't touch them for any reason, you know, not on my birthday, not on a holiday. But when I would have those, that was it for the diet. It was over. And then things got worse. And I tried more and more erratic means to lose the weight. I would try, you know, crazy things. I dabbled in restricting and purging. That wasn't my jam. That's not how I get my high. That's something I do to try to control and enjoy my eating. That's how I've used that. I've used, you know, some pills that made me really wacky. Oh boy, I've got 5 minutes left. Pills that made me wacky. I even tried hard drugs. Anyway, long story short, believe it or not, the hard drugs thing didn't work out for me. And I wound up in another program to address an addiction. And I start realizing that, oh boy, if you apply this big book thing to my eating, this is it. This is the nail completely. Because I don't identify with the big book on every last point in that addiction. But on this addiction and this compulsive overeating, this is home. This is addiction number one. And I am a low down, you know, deep, deep bottom eater. So it's funny. I'd asked a woman to be my sponsor that night in this other club. And I remember asking my friends in the club, I'm like, you know, anybody who does one of these food programs? And my friend goes, you're kidding, right? I said, what? And he goes, your sponsor. And this is God to me, because not only do I find somebody, there's not a lot of us out there in the wild, but I find somebody who's in it. She's sponsoring, she's speaking, and she loves the steps at Overeaters Anonymous. So I get on board, and it's not going to happen. You're telling me I can't have certain foods, and that's just not going to do it. So I decide I'm going to, you know, and I never really wanted to be here. Like, I wanted to take my thin and go. That was the other thing. So I packed up my bag and said, I'm doing it. Tried to use it like a diet. It doesn't even last a few weeks before I begin a year of progressive binging that ended up with me on such a frightening fad diet that I'm using needles and I'm starting to consider taking hard drugs again. I'm starting to consider to take crazy prescriptions, all because this is where my food takes me. My food takes me everywhere dark. You know, my food takes me back to the gates of suicide and I don't want to go back there. So, you know, it got so bad that I was eating and eating. One night I'd gotten so fat, I couldn't even fit in my coat. And that's like, you can't a lot of grace with your coat. I have to say in general, but I just blew right through my coat with my weight. And my sponsor gave me one from when she was heavier and it was a pea coat and it was February. And I went out to dinner and I ate so much food that I threw up on myself by accident. And because it happened on a Saturday night, the cleaner's not open on Sunday. You drop it off on Monday. Maybe you get it back on Tuesday. And I went from Saturday to Tuesday without a warm winter coat. And I was just mortified. Like, here I am in this hoodie because I can't fit in any coats. So I go and it happens again the next week, the exact next week, this humiliation. And for whatever reason, that was it. I was just done. I mean, at this period, all of my body hurt. And the light was gone from my eyes. My eyes were yellow. You could feel something in my abdomen that caused pain. I don't know if that was my pancreas or my liver or what. And I got on board and I came here to stay and I did all the stuff. And I wanted this so badly in the beginning that I drove 8 hours a week to get to the meetings where I saw people loving this. You know, I did the steps with every fiber of my being, withholding nothing. And I let God come in. And that was a surprise because I'm like, no, I know God from the other fellowship. He's good. He's going to do this. But really, I didn't think he could. So in that fellowship, I came in an atheist and did my second step like that. In this fellowship, I thought I knew God. And that was a much tougher place to go. But what I learned is that I had to go from believing in God, saying, yeah, okay, he works, you know, to faith. And that trip was the hardest. Because faith is like being on the side of the road and waiting for that person that you called to show up while you're stranded. And it's so uncomfortable. And the first days, I'm not going to lie, it felt like an amputation to not have the food. I didn't think it would ever be okay again. I didn't think I'd ever have joy again. The only hope I had in here was the tiniest sliver that at least my problem wouldn't get worse. I didn't think I would lose the weight. I didn't think that I would, I didn't think I'd be able to live comfortably or peacefully without food. But with the steps has gotten me cash and prizes, I've maintained an 80-pound weight loss over the past, well, I guess, 4 years. I'm 5 years abstinent, but 4 years since the weight's been off. And better than that, you know, I'm not fighting the food. I'm not resisting. It doesn't call to me. That's so much bigger, you know? And I got it for the simple price of doing these steps. And today, what I do to keep it, I do 10 steps, meaning, you know, if I feel a certain type of way, I go tell another person in this program and they help me get my head on straight. I do my 11 step. I make time for God today. In the morning, I get quiet and still. At night, I get quiet and still again. And I look over my day and I do 12 step work. I speak when I'm asked. I sponsor other women. Recently, I discovered how cool intergroup service is. I went from somebody that had so much to say about what they weren't doing, it wasn't good enough, that I said, you know what, if I'm going to complain, let me show up. And I'm suiting up and showing up. And oh my God, it made my recovery pop in 3 days. And I'm running out of time. So I'm going to cut that. You know, it's just, I know I dwelled a lot on the hopelessness of my situation. I wish I had spent more time on the recovery before I ran out of time. But I hope if I've conveyed anything is that I am bottom of the barrel hopeless. And if this could happen for me, it could happen for absolutely anyone, anyone. Just show up and take it. We love you. We're here. You're not a bother. We love walking through this with you. It is a pleasure to be here. Thank you for letting me have my recovery for another day by inviting me to speak here.